Hey, Matt, thanks for joining us again on the Big Picture Podcast. For those who haven't listened to your first episode, can you briefly reintroduce yourself and then we go from there?
Certainly. My name's Matt Larson, and from the previous episode, I talked a little bit about how I got into cybersecurity and my background and everything else. Been in cybersecurity for about 9+ years now, which is crazy to think about. I got my start in 2014. Worked my way up through help desk, and recently I met Bid through Verizon, no longer with Verizon. Been with now KPMG for about a year.
Nice. And the first episode we had together was actually back in November of 2021. So over 2 years ago. Over 2 years ago, and yeah, we've kept in touch ever since. So we both left Verizon. I left before you did. And of course, different things have happened since then. The major change in the tech world was the introduction of ChatGPT, artificial intelligence, and so on. So to kind of start the discussion from there, based on everything that has happened so far, ChatGPT was introduced in November of 2022. Again, over a year of just artificial intelligence, changing things up in the tech industry, and of course, all over the world. Every age group has had impact, has felt the impact of artificial intelligence. So from your point of view, how do you see this AI boom, to put it that way? How has it impacted your own corner of the world?
All right. So first off, before I get into how it's impacted, I will say that AI is either going to be very dangerous and we're going to put a stop to it, or it's going to take over everything. And governments and everything else have to recognize the human aspect behind what's actually behind AI and the type of data that it collects. So the way that it's impacted me personally in my position right now, I'm actually having to go through some ChatGPT logs, OpenAI, stuff like that. Our biggest concern right now is privacy, because we found out that it, so we could definitely see it post, but it has its own internal like inspection at that the next gen IDS IPSs can't break right now. And like, we're able to see it from other AI sources. I don't know if you're familiar. Snapchat has an AI right now as well. And we're able to see post data from that and everything else. If someone posts on Reddit, things like that, code, internal source code, things like that, we're able to see it. But ChatGPT is its own beast in itself. And it's definitely a concern because we don't know what data is being sent into the server. I just tested it today where I put fictitious social security numbers, name, addresses, things like that, and said organize it in XYZ order. It went ahead and did it. And now if that was real data, it would have been collected into the AI server.
That's a big challenge because a lot of people try to use it for their typical day-to-day job with good intentions. They're just trying to do their job better. However, what they fail to realize, or what they just simply don't know, is that everything you impute into an AI system, whether a large language model, or even if it's for you to edit a picture for you, DALL-E, for example, and you're inputting something, a text, audio, video, picture, whatever the case is, all of that is going to be stored somewhere in one server, in one data center somewhere. And that's the last you would see of that data. People don't think about it that way because they feel like, okay, I'm just telling it to rewrite one sentence in an email, or I'm telling it to modify something and check for grammatical errors or spelling errors. But all of that is being stored somewhere. So think of the sensitive data that is also being stored somewhere.
And technically, it could actually break EU law as well. And that's one thing I'm paying attention to, of course. You know, I'm still kind of Mr. GDPR. Yeah, just looking into some of the data privacy concerns and everything else, there could actually be big fines from this if it's caught. And that's the catch 22, right? It's like you don't know what sort of data is being posted. And that's what we're trying to catch before it gets too bad.
And again, even with companies now leaning more on some of these AI tools, a lot of companies have started developing their own internal GPTs, transformers, and then basically building their own large language models. And a secondary effect of that is people have been laid off because you have entire department that their job is now basically redundant simply because the company has figured out a way to be more efficient, to be more productive, basically. So what would you say is that ethical? Is that necessary?
So is it ethical? No. Is it illegal? I mean, is it ethical? No. Is it illegal? No. But the thing is, of course, everybody's looking at the bottom line right now. I don't know if you've read the article, but there was a big law firm that was testing AI where they had let go of several top-level attorneys. Think about that. These are educated people that were let go because of AI. And what they were doing was they were leveraging AI to the point where it's like, okay, so this is the civil case. X amount of dollars can be rewarded. This is what happened. This is the maximum award that could happen due to XYZ state law, etc. Same thing with criminal. It's like, okay, you commit, let's say, a top-level state felony or whatever, it will spit out, you know, what the consequences are, how many years you could get, and then it will internally negotiate deals. The problem with that is there was another law firm that was using it that ended up getting caught because the information ended up being wrong and they got disbarred. And I don't know if you heard about that as well. So some of the data is still a little bit inaccurate right now. It will get to a point, though. I mean, it has on the flip side of it, it has helped with medicine. It has helped a couple people save lives right now. There was a mother who couldn't figure out what was wrong with their child, and she inputted all the data from the medical records into ChatGPT, and it spit out a diagnosis and said it could be this, and no doctor had diagnosed it yet.
Wow. So basically became my own personal doctor. Wow.
Yeah. But I don't think people should be losing their jobs over it. What I think, just like everything else that we have out there, it should be leveraged as a tool to help support what you're trying to build up. It's like Lego bricks, right? You could have an automated machine to build Lego bricks all day long, but if that machine breaks, you got to go back to the manual work. It's the same concept. You want to build brick by brick by brick and have the automated tool to assist you through the process, but you don't want it to take over 100%.
Right. History is finding a way to repeat itself because when the internet came around, a lot of people felt people are going to lose their jobs. And with time, when we zoom out, I'm sure when it was happening way back then, 30, 40 years ago, nobody could predict how the internet would actually create more jobs for actual humans. People thought it was going to take away jobs from humans. So I feel like the same thing is happening now. AI is showing up and people think they're going to lose their jobs. Everybody has to go learn about AI so that we can all keep our jobs. And something I listened to on another podcast a while back is AI will not replace you. Someone who can use AI to do your job more efficiently, faster, more productively, that person is the person that will replace you. Because ultimately, AI would still need people to make it do more AI things. Because guess what? It's humans who are creating the AI. It's artificial. The name literally says artificial intelligence, meaning humans are behind it.
And we're not necessarily going to be AI. I mean, because, okay, so knowledge is power, but knowledge with action is wisdom. And it's going to take that wisdom to leverage what you were talking about, the AI along with the human intelligence, to mash those and come up with a great product, a great idea, things like that. So think about this, like, for me personally, I'll sit there and I'll be like, oh, this query is not working right. Of course, I won't post sensitive data. I'll change it to some generic information, and it will spit out, hey, this is where you went wrong with your syntax. That is this. So I already have the idea in my head of what I'm trying to do. It just helps me formulate the way that I was trying to write it out, if that makes sense.
I have a friend who was trying to figure out some business ideas, and it was basically asking GPT a bunch of questions. And the way ChatGPT works is, in one prompt, in one session, you can basically keep asking it different questions, and it will remember based on that working memory, unless you delete it and you start a new one afresh. It would basically remember the conversation, even the ones you feel like you yourself have forgotten. But as long as you keep that same thread, basically. So he went ahead and was putting in all these different ideas. And to him, it felt like it was just jumping all over the place. And after a while, I think it took him about 6 days. Yeah. GPT was able to come out with an idea that encapsulated his chaotic mind and actually streamlined it for him. Like, okay, how about you start this little program, and then 3 months later, you expand it into this. And all of that came out from him just giving it random ideas. Okay, I have an idea for a book. No, scratch that. I have an idea for a podcast. And then it was just like seeing in real time, it's like having a personal assistant thinking for you. So think about people that can leverage that. Maybe you have someone who is actually a personal assistant to a CEO, now making that CEO more efficient, or someone who is like a personal assistant to a famous musician, or someone who is just an executive assistant to some famous person. And that's just one example. People in tech, like you and I, we can basically use stuff like that. Of course, no proprietary information. Just coming up with, I see this threat actor doing blah, blah, blah. These are the kind of things they try to do with IOCs. What could they possibly also do in the future? And, you know, just thinking out loud in that way. So those are the examples when people say AI is going to replace you. I'm like, no. Think, the ability to think ahead already set people apart. Mm-hmm. Now you have an AI tool that can even do that for you times 100, times 1,000. Then you become more valuable in your organization. But that's just me. So we've seen one negative impact, tech layoffs. Can you come up with, as we're discussing, some of the advantages of AI in not even the tech industry, just generally speaking? Maybe you have a neighbor and your neighbor's kids are going to school. People use GPT to do homework now, but then some kids use it to cheat. What are some of the ways you can think of that, okay, GPT can impact just random individuals, not only just tech folks?
Well, think about this, right? So people, you have copywriters that are out there. You have people that are taking doctor's notes and things like that. So that's definitely going to help transcribe those notes the way that they should be, with punctuation errors being fixed and everything else. But it goes back to, you need to sanitize the data to make sure that you're not leaking any sensitive information, because you could violate HIPAA. But if you're doing it right and you're keeping it generic, then it could help in that way for whatever you're trying to do for your task, for your career, whatever, individually, for whatever you're trying to do. Now, like, let's say that a student is stuck on homework, right? Don't use it to cheat. Use it to leverage why the answer is the way it is. So you could ask it, you know, you could ask it a geometry question. You could ask it a science question. You could be like, well, why does XYZ happen if you do this? It'll tell you why. So take the what. So you should, instead of just writing down the answer, turning it in and cheating with GPT, ask yourself, why is it this way? And when you ask the why, that's where you gain the wisdom that I was talking
about. And I actually didn't think about it that way. Using AI as a form of second layer knowledge abstraction. So apparently, I've been doing this same thing you've described because I'm trying to study to become a basketball coach, just a hobby. I like watching basketball. I enjoy analyzing basketball. I listen to 6-7 different podcasts about basketball. So that's just me and the way my brain works. And of course, I still have tech hobbies and so on. So I go into GPT and I'm like, okay, I heard these two guys analyzing this basketball play. And then I type in, okay, if there is a dribble handoff and then there's a flare screen, and then now I'm all being geeky about basketball. And then I just input it into ChatGPT saying, this particular play I just described, tell me a different way or 2-3 different ways of running the exact same play using this same set of players. And then it gives me these answers and I'm like, huh, interesting. So now I'm teaching myself about basketball tactics using GPT. 2 years ago, couldn't have been possible. I would have had to go on Amazon to buy books about basketball. And of course, the knowledge will be limited because what was available as of 2 years ago that I would be exposed to. But now I'm potentially being exposed to what never existed before in the world of basketball to basically teach me basketball based on artificial intelligence. That's just mind blowing. Just so many other applications of going 2-4 layers to abstract knowledge that never existed before. Wow.
And think about this. For example, you were talking about the basketball scenario. So you could ask, okay, why does the basketball bounce? It is, say, because it's made of rubber. Well, why is it made of rubber? So it has elasticity, so it could bounce around and you could do X, Y, Z with it, that sort of thing. And then you could be like, okay, so what is the velocity of the bounce? What is the distance between this pass and that pass? If they're standing on this side of the court, you know, if they're shooting a three-pointer from this angle, what is the triangular position that it would go into the basket, that sort of thing. So you got to think about all that as well.
And of course, you can even tell it to explain to you like you're in middle school, or explain to you like you're a 70-year-old grandma. And then, of course, it will break these things down for you. yep.
So if I had to break it down for someone that is older, for ChatGPT, I would tell them it is like a virtual assistant that you could use to leverage yourself to make you more efficient.
Definitely. Of course, we cannot talk about AI without mentioning social media, because I feel like one of them precipitated the other. It's like the chicken and egg question. People think AI now was inevitable because social media came first. And I like to counter argue that if AI had come first, social media would have followed right after AI showed up, if AI showed up first, like ChatGPT and so on. So to kind of demarcate AI, when I say AI, I'm referring to ChatGPT, because AI has been around for a long time. Google Maps, for example, is an artificial intelligence tool. How do I get from point A to point B in the most efficient manner, fastest, shortest distance possible? Language translation, Google Translate. If you've ever used Google Translate, that's AI. If you've ever played a video game and you played against the computer, in quotes, the computer you're playing against is an AI model, is an AI. Yeah.
Yeah, it's AI. Same with chess.com, and it scores you.
So referring to AI now, I'm not talking about AI as something new. I'm referring to large language models that basically generate texts and videos and pictures. That's what I mean by AI. So based on that clarification, social media as we know it now, going hand in hand with the emergence of ChatGPT, what would you say is going to be the impacts of one on the other? So how would large language models interfere with social media? You mentioned how Snapchat has an AI component now. So from what you've seen so far, the interaction between social media and large language models and everything that comes with that.
So on one side of the coin, I think some of it's pretty funny, right? There's people that are being silly with it, things like that, posting silly videos, chopping heads off and replacing, you know, one head with another's head and you know, overlapping the audio, things like that. I don't know if you've seen the videos on social media from a guy called There I Ruined It. he takes songs that are older and puts an AI twist to them. If you haven't seen them, you can pull them up on TikTok and YouTube. They're pretty funny. Wow. He leverages AI to, you know, take Johnny Cash, for example, with like apple bottom jeans or whatever the case may be. And it's really, really, really funny. And those are the, you know, sort of that's the way it should be being used on social media. But then you have the flip side of it. I don't know if you've seen this, but so there was a recent test that was done by a journalist with Elon Musk that was posted to social media to realize if it was his voice or not. And every single person said that they thought his voice was real. When it ended up being an AI voice of Elon Musk. So that's pretty scary. So it could also be inputting things of what people said or didn't say and make them look, you know, negative in that sort of spotlight. Celebrities, entertainers, songwriters, you name it, it could have a negative impact on them, but it could also be a positive impact if that stops and people realize, okay, let's think about this. Is that something that they would actually say? So it's like at this point, we can't take everything for its word anymore. You have to investigate. And that's where I think journalism has gone a little dead, in my opinion. One thing I'd like to say while we're on the topic of social media, MySpace was the original
social media. I had your MySpace account.
Yeah, MySpace was there. And I don't know if you know this, but Tom from MySpace was real. He was one of the top level people for MySpace. He was at a conference where Zuckerberg was there, and Zuckerberg had asked him a question and said, "Hey, if you did this, could this happen?" And he said yes, and gave him some pointers. And he gave Zuckerberg the idea for Facebook unintentionally. And then, of course, we all know that MySpace went dead. But also take a look at that, right? When you had MySpace, you had the templates. And those templates, I think if you go way back when, people have been researching this for years. And it could have been a precursor for what we have for AI today. I think MySpace, it was so undervalued. And it set so much precedent to what we have in the world today, because without MySpace, I don't think we would have the technology that we have.
Right. And similar to a conversation I was having with a colleague this past week, a lot of the things we are doing now, they're inadvertently setting the foundations for future technology. Because like I said, I was describing all the different AI examples, video game, when you play against the computer, Google Maps, Google Translate, and so on and so on. All of that were AI, but we took them for granted because I turn on my Google Maps or Apple Maps and I just navigate from here to church or here to wherever I'm going, and it just takes me there. And then I close the app and then I forget about it. And then I meet someone who speaks only Spanish, and then I pull up my app and then I speak into my phone, it translates it, and then they speak and then it translates. And then I just take it for granted. And now I'm basically using the same GPT to run translations. So I put in a website and then translate it. I'm like, wait, this was what Google Translate used to do, because I would put in a URL, a news article in Russian, and it would translate it on googletranslate.com. Now I'm just doing the exact same thing on openai.chatgpt.com. So it's basically more of the same. And now with Apple Vision Pro coming out in February, they are calling developers I got the email saying, developers, we need you to build apps for the Vision Pro. I'm willing to bet that 99% of the apps that will be on Vision Pro will be having something to do with AI or the other, because virtual reality, augmented reality, you want to be able to put on the Vision Pro and look at a billboard in Chinese, and then it's going to say the English translation into your ear. That is an AI component.
Yeah. That's also pretty scary too, if you think about it though, because that's going to be the point of AI disconnecting society even further from what we have today. You take a look at, for example, China, Japan, things like that. You have all these single people over there that aren't meeting in real life because they have, and it's been researched and diagnosed and published that this is actually a known fact that the dating scene, people aren't dating right now because of the technology that we have that's advanced, and people have anxiety of going outside their house. Young people, 18 to 24, were asked, if someone rang your doorbell, does it raise their blood pressure? Does it raise their anxiety? Over 70% said yes. Think about that. And doorbells have been around.
I used to be excited to go check who's at the door.
Yeah.
Because I know the pandemic messed a lot of things up. I have friends who they were not exactly extroverts, but then it's like they've gotten way worse since the pandemic. Because pandemic, of course, everybody had to keep to themselves. We limited interaction significantly. People who would rather keep to themselves, they pretty much started working from home. And then for the other people who were like, nah, I can't work from home all the time. And then people return to the office. And for some 100% remote people, they will still find a nearby coffee shop simply because they just cannot stay home and work from home all day. And now we see where, like you mentioned, with the dating and everything, people don't even want to pick up the phone and call the person they are dating. They would rather just text them all day long.
No.
How do you do that?
People are breaking up over text. People are quitting their jobs over text. Yeah, it's a disconnected world right now. We need to get back to that connection. I think one of the biggest ways you could contribute right now, if you're a remote worker, if you're trying to find somebody, if you want to break outside of your shell, get out there and start small and get out there in the community and make it something to where it's just not about yourself anymore. Because when you start serving others, that's where it's at a point where it's no longer about you. It's like, what can I do for you? Not what I could do for me.
Yeah. Because some of these social media platforms, they say that I don't want to mention names. They say they created this platform so that people can be more connected, but they themselves know that the data shows that their social media platforms is making people less connected. I have friends who use social media, and then they say that, oh, when was the last time you spoke to this other friend? And then they're like, ah, well, I still saw him two days ago. I'm like, where did you see him? And then he goes on Instagram. I'm like, no, you didn't see him. You saw his picture that he posted. So you have this mental shortcut saying, oh, well, he was in Orlando to watch a basketball game, so I know where he was and what he was doing. No, you don't. You saw his picture or his reel or his story from inside the basketball arena. You didn't pick up the phone to talk to him. And then he told you himself, and then he gave you the summary of how the basketball game went. No, none of that happened. So you feel like you're connected because you're seeing everybody's updates, but you're not exactly getting the updates from them. It's like you're watching your favorite actor on TV, and all of a sudden you think you know your favorite actor because he gained weight last year. Now he has lost weight because I saw his latest advert for a toothpaste commercial, and I saw that he has a new baby now because I saw his picture when he posted a Christmas greeting. No, you don't know him. You don't know what it feels like to be that person. So all of that is, it's not making people connect. It's actually making it worse, because think about how many people you can pick up the phone to call if you if you're having a panic attack.
Right.
Not many people can answer that question.
I don't know about for women, but I could say for guys, there's been research done. Guys only have 1 to 2 friends in life that they can reach out to at any time at 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. And about 20% have zero. I believe that
100%. Yep. I used to do this mental exercise saying, if, God forbid, I'm on the highway and then I have a flat tire and it's late in the night, who can I call? And then I start to scroll on my phone book. Who can I call to come meet me wherever I am on the highway, regardless of where it is? And they would drop what they are doing to come help me figure out my broken down car.
And that's why I'm saying getting connected to community is so important. Just so you know, on my personal side of things, I personally got connected back to church, and we have something called small group. And within that small group, we made a lot of friends, like a ton of friends, where we're actually connected. We're having meals together. We're going out 2-3 times a week together. We're taking nature hikes together. We're living life together to the point where, like you said, I could scroll through my phone, but like, oh, John Doe's in our group, so I'm going to give John a call. And I'm stuck at the highway at 2 o'clock in the morning. I know who'll
come. Yeah, we have something similar down here. Yeah. I was just going to say we have something similar down here as well. And it's just for churches and mosques and temples and synagogues to be the ones to take this on. It just shows how society has been set back. Because stuff like that, I want to say, should start from the family unit. Because kids don't even play outside anymore. It's on Halloween that I realize how many kids live in my neighborhood. Not like there's something wrong with it. I mean, I don't expect parents to start randomly showing up their kids on a random Tuesday. But there should be activities. You know, neighbors don't even know each other anymore. People take walks, right? But then they pass each other on the way, on the streets, and then they just say hi. And you're supposed to be neighbors. So you're not talking to your neighbors.
Yeah.
Talk less of talking to your coworkers outside of work.
When's the last time you had a block party? You know, I mean, they used to be very popular in the 70s, 80s, 90s.
Yeah, you hardly block party for no reason. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, but then, of course, social media is not all doom and gloom. There's a lot of benefits that have come out of having social media here and there. Of course, everybody uses social media differently. In my own little corner of the world, this podcast is one example of using what I know, what I have, to reach out and just talk to people. People like you have come on. I have people that I've met on LinkedIn who have come on my podcast more than once. I have people I've met at a conference, several conferences. I try to attend as much as possible. I've been to conferences just in the past year, Canada, Denver, all over the place. And I've met people at these conferences, and I've talked to them on my podcast. So that's just me personally. I would rather talk to people. People think, when I tell people I'm an introvert, they're like, nah, you're not an introvert. And I'm like, okay, I won't be the one to convince you. Go ask my wife. She would tell you whether. But I mean, it just goes to show that I'm willing to put in everything it takes to just connect with people.
Right. Yep. You're putting yourself out there, like you're getting outside of your shell. Thank you. That's awesome.
So in terms of, let's bring this back to cybersecurity, we see a lot of ransomware have happened in the past, almost on a weekly basis now. There's so many websites where you can have like, okay, ransomware attacks on, they break it down by industry, company, country, and so on. Every day, at least, at the very minimum, the ones we hear about, 20, 30 different ransomware attacks per day.
there's a lot of ransom attacks. User training. There's not enough user training, and that has to be reinforced. Not just every quarter, not every 6 months, not once a year. You need to reinforce that every single month and let them be aware. Hey, you need to watch out for this. You don't need to click on random links. You don't need to go to that website. Stay within the confines of your corporate computer to conduct business. Be professional. And that's where some of these things happen. Social engineering happens. Someone could be so slick and be like, hey, I'm calling, my internet's down, can you help me? And as soon as you click the link, they have your information. Don't plug in random USB drives to your computer, because as the moment that USB gets plugged into your computer, that's it. Payload's there. Doesn't matter if it's been in there for 1 second.
Yep, definitely. And I feel like some of these also has to do with how AI, especially large language models, GPT, became available for everyone. So back in 2010, when the iPhone was introduced, now a lot of research has begun to look back and say mental health decline coincided with the introduction of the iPhone. The good scientists, the good social scientists doing this research, they are careful to not say that one thing caused the other. All they are saying is the iPhone was introduced, mental health began to decline around the same time. Maybe it's a cause-effect relationship. Maybe causation does not equal correlation, or how do they say that fancy psychological thing. But here is the data. Interpret it however you want. So I feel like the same thing is applicable now to AI and then hackers doing hacker things. November of 2022, ChatGPT was released, available for everyone, from professors in campuses to musicians composing their songs to artists trying to figure out how to get inspiration to speech writers for, I know, at least three different speech writers for governors in the US who use ChatGPT. Even in DC, some of these politicians and congressional aides use ChatGPT. Kudos to them. Hackers, of course, have been able to use ChatGPT to figure out phishing emails, make it sound more convincing. Like you were describing before we started recording, just to touch on that for a little bit. What can you say about GPT and phishing emails?
So I would like to say for ChatGPT along with, well, not necessarily ChatGPT, right? Because early release, like you said, a ChatGPT, yeah, you can do certain things. But now if you go to ChatGPT, a simple request as like, how do I elevate my privileges? It's not going to tell you. It's going to say it's a security concern. The earlier versions did, the later versions don't. They've actually like fine-tuned it and realized like we're not going to let bad guys use this for bad things. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that other AI sources exist to do these sort of things. And so when I say AI, I'm not talking about ChatGPT because there's other AI sources out there. But what's being leveraged right now is AI for phishing emails. And what's being done is that AI is taking emails. They're no longer there with spelling errors. They're no longer there with punctuation errors. They're no longer there with fake domain URLs with a redirected URI pass. What it is they go in there, and some of it may be like a man in the middle attack where they're able to get you, send an email, do a social engineering attack on a company, get that information, send you the real link, and then your information is then compromised. So think about that for a second. But AI has definitely increased in phishing emails. We've actually seen an increase of over 200% in legitimate phishing emails over the past year than we previously did when people realized that, or the bad threat actors realized that they could use it to leverage phishing emails.
Yeah. And of course, it's just going to go downhill from here. There's Copilot, which is basically AI to generate software code. And now you have people that have no background knowledge of coding. They can just go on GitHub Copilot and put a few codes together. And before you know it, they're running a website with the necessary HTML elements and all the forms and pretty much fancy stuff. So now you have a wannabe hacker who's messing around on Copilot, and if they have some basic fundamental aptitude, they can just do some badness and send off a phishing email to some executive in some country. And then before you know it, the executive is wiring money to some offshore account, and the cyber insurance don't want to touch it because you fell for something you shouldn't fall for.
That's why if you're a cybersecurity professional, you need to be looking at your header information. The header information in the emails will actually show where it's coming from. You could also do a trace route for the information as well. You'll definitely be able to get the information from the header to realize whether it's legitimate or not. And if you're smart enough, you will have your company sign off internally with certificates to validate the email that it came from an internal source or valid source.
And interestingly, AI is in the best position to do everything you just described, because it's an automatable process. All you don't even need developers to develop that code for you to put an AI tool in front of your email servers to be able to strip down every incoming. You can basically have a plug and play ready-made tool. It's open source, available on GitHub or anywhere you want to find it, and do that for you. But guess what? Last year, 2023, the number one kind of email scam was, I think, the BEC. Still, way after ChatGPT was introduced, meaning people still find it difficult to catch up. So the attackers are always going to be one step ahead. Imagine people still falling for BEC scams, business email compromise, where an attacker sent a phishing email and then they scam a company millions of dollars, where we can easily have an AI tool to be able to tell you that the email you're getting, you can even package it into a nice little graphic user interface where you can see this email is coming from this city in this country. It's mimicking this URL.
But it can't mimic your internal source.
That is something possible that a high school student on Copilot can figure it out for you as of right now, today.
Yes. Yeah. It's something that could definitely be automated. I would like to name a company out there that we're actually looking into that actually does some of that semi-automation process, and they actually leverage AI, and it's called Fishport. And it's very, very good. They're similar to Proofpoint, except they do more of like email type monitoring to look at the header information and quarantine it before it even gets to the sender. Like I said, Proofpoint had its own quarantine as well, but this was more like AI generated, like you were mentioning.
And just thinking about everything that is doable on the internet. For example, we're just describing how you want your email to be more secure. You can use AI for that. You want your phone to screen spam calls. Now you can use AI for that, because think about it. What will it take to build an app that would screen your calls using AI as of today, January 2024? That is...
It's already being done.
So you don't even have to depend on how AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile says they screen your calls for you. I don't want to trust them. I can just say AI, based on whatever it is telecom companies do to know what's spam and what's not spam, or I can even include my own criteria saying screen calls from area codes that are not exactly legitimate area codes. So like virtual IP, VoIP numbers, or however it is they operate them, or screen calls from this particular country, because I have no business receiving calls from that country. I don't know anybody there. I'm not supposed to know anybody there, and so on.
Yeah.
Or screen calls that have this specific range of spam area, whatever it is, the criteria is. AI can do that for me.
Yeah.
I don't have to pay anybody as of right now, January 2024.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I think it's, in some ways, in some aspects, it's being underused. But like you were saying, like, yeah, you could definitely set it up with the VoIP. You could set it up with the different things, the email servers. But that's one thing that you also got to watch out for. Just as you use AI for good, the threat actor's thinking the same thing, but except to use it for bad. So you want to make sure that wherever you put your AI, of course, you have your internal email server away from your public-facing domain, things like that. You don't want to put your same thing with AI. You don't want to put your AI technology on your public-facing domain. Right. You want to separate a VPC basically for it.
So there was something in the news recently that says Google was laying off workers on its voice-activated assistant. Did you hear about that?
I didn't, but I do know that there's been multiple layoffs across the industry for a few years now. I was actually one of them. So after I had left Verizon, I had got a government job for about 9 months as a contractor with the DOJ, and that didn't turn out too hot. And you knew this when I worked at Verizon, that I always wanted to work inside the government, and I finally that dream come true, but the grass wasn't greener on the other side as a contractor. So I went back into the private sector. But when I was laid off from the government, it took me 4 months before I found KPMG. And I think the tech layoffs, not just tech, but the multiple industries, healthcare, retail, real estate, I think all the layoffs are happening right now because everybody doesn't know what to do with the technology that we have right now. I think that's one. But two, I think nobody knows how to reset the economy financially. I think that's playing a huge part into the massive tech layoffs right now as well. And also think about this. In 2020, there was a boom to hire people. People were quitting, leaving other jobs, and getting massive pays. And I think it's now hurting multiple companies, which is why they're retracting back on some of those people and offers and everything else, and trying to reset to get level headed of where they should have been in the first place, because those offers should have never been there.
And because of how the pandemic basically messed everything up, now is when companies are trying to catch up. And of course, companies answer to shareholders.
And that's the biggest thing, is they don't know how to answer to the shareholder.
And then, of course, there's the inflation. And some people said the inflation happened. Some people said the inflation almost happened. Some people said there was never an inflation.
Right.
And depending on wherever you land on that spectrum, the point is the economy is the economy. There are people who feel changes in the economy way more than other people. Companies feel the effects of slight changes in the economy more than families, more than individuals, more than a single person in a one-bedroom apartment, definitely more than a five-people family in wherever they live, and so on and so forth. So all of this to say that we can probably never know how much impact the past 3 years have had on the economy, but we can have insights. For example, the ongoing tech layoffs, companies pivoting towards AI or pivoting away from AI. There was a news that came out recently about a rental car company selling off its EV fleet because they miscalculated. So they felt the future was going to be electric vehicles. They bought a bunch of Teslas to be renting to people. Nobody rented the Teslas. So now they're selling off 20,000 Teslas and replacing them with gas-powered cars.
Yeah.
So does that mean...
Same thing with the Tesla Cybertruck.
I only see rich people buying it out in California. And I'm like, well, they are the only ones that can afford it. And guess what? They're not about to travel across the country in this Tesla truck. They probably take it out to dinner, take it out to the movies, and they park it in their garage. That's it.
Right. I'm always going to have a gas-powered car, but that's another thing with technology and cyber, right? Is like there's all these services that are being offered now for, pay to start your car, pay to remote, pay to access the radio, pay for XYZ, pay for heated seats. Like they're trying to nickel and dime you to death where the car is not even going to be yours anymore. I forgot what – there's a foreign company overseas that's testing it right now. But it's not going too well because people are not paying extra. Just like for me right now, I have a key start for my vehicle, and they wanted me to pay for a Toyota Connected Care services, and I said no. And so, of course, I mean, there's not anything they could do. It wasn't in my contract or anything when we bought the vehicle. But I could see that being something in the future where, they have your data, they have your information, and that could be a huge cyber risk as well. And real quick, there's one more thing I want to touch on about ChatGPT. That's another side of it, right? Of a threat actor. Think about this. Your information, like how you have your saved history that you were previously talking about. And if within the same thread, it'll pull up that previous data, et cetera. Well, if that information gets leaked, just think about the amount of data that would be out there if ChatGPT ever got hacked.
And people use GPT for all sorts of things. Some people use it to ask medical related questions. Some people use it to ask mental health related questions. Some people ask about financial advice and all sorts of things in between.
Right.
And all of that is, there's no cloud. It's on somebody's computer, like the saying goes. So it's on a specific server in a data center in maybe Wyoming or Montana that has OpenAI labeled on it. So
But I don't blame AI for the tech layoffs. I don't think that's the reason why people are getting laid off. Maybe in some small regions, companies, things like that, that are testing it. Like I said, with the law firms, yes. I think it's overall just trying to reset the economy. People were overpaid and overhired in 2020.
And a lot of companies got into business and they realized they have nothing to do in that industry. A lot of companies miscalculated and sold something they shouldn't have sold or bought something they shouldn't have bought. A lot of CEOs made strategic decisions in a totally wrong direction. And they couldn't have foresaw that direction wasn't the direction to go. So now they have to cut costs to save money because they took a wrong path. So many different layers and so on and so forth. Yeah. I don't envy any business owner right now, just to put it that way.
No.
So is there anything else you would want us to touch on? We've easily done 1 hour again, like before, and it doesn't even feel like 1 hour. So.
Listen, social media, AI, things like that. Yeah, there's always bad sides to it, but there's good sides to it as well. So you've got to take the positive with the negative and outweigh, realize like, it's the way that the world's going, just like when we had computers back in the 90s when they were first coming about. It's something that we're going to have to adapt to, but we could adapt to it positively and make sure and put guidelines and regulations in place to make sure that the technology is being used right. I mean, that's the worst thing that you want is like CP to go rampant or hacking to go rampant, ransomware, things like that. You don't want to see any of that take off. You also don't want to see like AI take off with a mind of its own to control humans. And so there's, like I said, there's going to have to be a lot of regulations that are going to be put into place. And I think it's going to get more strict down the line. But like I said, it's not all bad. I mean,
it's been great catching up with you again. And of course, you're welcome to come back on anytime to talk about the topic of the day or the topics of the day, as the case may be. Once this is ready to go, of course, I'll let you know. And then we go from there. Thanks so much once again.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. And remember, knowledge is power, but knowledge with action is wisdom.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Yes. You're welcome. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.